So culturally competent, because this is kind of the politically correct term to use these days, culturally appropriate. Basically, what I'm going to give you is a summary of the way I view these methods. I'm not a methodologist. I feel that methods should be used according to what you need to do, and some of it here is well used methods in qualitative, mostly qualitative, and what I try to do is do a combination of methods according to the different tasks and phases of the project. And as the title implies, what we wanted to do is to give voice for Brazilians in any number of ways. I believe we have a very deep tradition and cultural experiences in Brazil regarding popular education, popular theater, popular democracy, and I try to apply this experience, that tradition that I'm very knowledgeable of because I was raised on it, this influence in this project here. So the first method that we use is what I said is an adaptation of focus groups. It's actually based on an experience we had from another researcher in Lowell, and we call them cultural conversations, which if you want to make a long story short, I would say it's a focus group with less focus and more freedom for participants to talk. I am a firm believer that we come from a culture of storytellers, of people who like to tell stories. So what we decided to do, instead of coming up with a typical guideline for interviews or discussions, we would like to have a more free-flowing conversation. So it is basically a mix of unstructured group interviews and listening sessions, because this is another thing that sometimes doesn't happen in focus groups. The moderator is too concerned about his or her focus, and sometimes it loses the focus of listening to what other people's focus are. And what we try to do is to do, as you saw here, to interview different groups of Brazilians, 5 to 7, and we did with painters, we did in food and restaurant workers, we did with youth, we did with house cleaners and small construction contractors and landscapers. And they range for about an hour to hour and a half, and I tried to make as much informal as possible. We took a lot of notes, we summarized them, we put them in a software to do analysis, to come up with themes, traditional standard procedures, as I call, for qualitative interviews. And we use this software called InVivo. There are several others out there. But what I found very interesting is that because I consider them to be, and we consider them to be, conversations, I still remember what people told me 4 years ago, as if they were sitting here with me, because it was a conversation that gave me insights that once the project moved on, I could confirm or deny or refuse the insights, as any standard procedure for research. You have hypotheses and then you test them. In qualitative research, we can do the same, but they're not measuring numbers, they're measuring words, ideas, and people gave those ideas, and over time, several of them were confirmed, others were amplified, or we got more deeper analysis of what they meant. Another method that we use is in the survey design. Typically, what we try to do when people speak different languages is we decide which language is the main language, and then you translate the survey to somebody else's language. In our case, we're talking about Portuguese and English. Based on formal work by a colleague of mine, Maria Brunet of UMass Lowell, she had used this method, which is somewhat not used by folks who design surveys in psychology, and I found literature about that. What you try to do is basically not decide one language to be the main language. The name for this is called decentry, which means no language is the center of the survey design. The reason being, languages do not necessarily translate easily, because if we are really thinking about cultures, people do have different cultures. I'm a firm believer that we see the world differently in different countries. We do the same stuff differently. We interpret signs differently. We interpret symbols different. So there's no reason to believe that when you put this in words, you just translate. And what we learned was that what you have to look for is equivalence of the conceptual ideas that you are asking in one language and the other. Nothing new for if you are an anthropologist, there's nothing new about this. But for those of us who are not from that field, we have a lot to learn. And what we try to do is to play both languages back and forth. Some ideas did not make much sense in English. You could translate because the realities of these workers are also different of these Brazilian immigrants. So he said it doesn't really make sense to ask this question this way. Well, it's not moving here. Why am I stuck? Go to the next for me, please. So the idea is the survey translation remains open until the conceptual clarity and appropriate grammatical structures are achieved. The advantage of the method is that questions become more culturally appropriate. For example, we had a hard time translating some of the questions or words because they're not easy to translate. And it didn't make sense to ask that scale for Brazilians because they don't think that way. If your work is really hard, very hard, how you feel about this? We said, you know what, if you ask this to Brazilians, they're not going to understand. And it was exactly what we found. They would not. If you ask an immigrant worker if they like to work hard, of course they're going to say yes. Is this too much? Well, that's another judgment. But this is not the right way to ask a question for people who came here to work hard. They would say, yes, I work hard and I'm fine with that. That's not what we expect to ask people when they are with a different frame to explain what they do, why they do. So in other words, what is hard is different. Moving right along, the third method that we use is called photo voice. It's kind of a new method that's being used in many different community-based research. What we tried to do is we gave cameras to Brazilian immigrants and asked them to take pictures of what they saw as hazards in the workplace. By giving them the cameras, discussing with them the pictures, discussing with them why they chose the hazards that they photographed, we ended up engaging them in a discussion, which in our case was really interesting because we were able to get an OSHA inspector to come to the meetings with them to discuss which hazards would address, which standards, OSHA standards, would address the hazards that they perceived. Obviously, those of us who are in health and safety for a long time, we've been looking for maps, we've been looking for ways of making visual. Well, guess what? There's nothing better for visual than if you can make movies, if you can make photos, and as the name says, it speaks. The photos speak by themselves, but they also lead to interpretation. So using the power of their images and stories to communicate with policymakers, in our case, it was mostly identifying the hazard, discussing the hazard. And what we ended up doing was a mix of creativity here. We used the idea of the quilts. We took the pictures. We sewed them in little pockets there. And then below the pockets, I'm not sure I can point here. Let's see. Here, what you have is the questions about the picture that they chose. And the answers to the questions are here. Here you have written a question that they came up. What is the main question that I want people to answer regarding this photo? And the answers would be here in these pockets. And we tried to figure out, do we have a tradition of quilts in Brazil? Quilts in the United States, of course, we know. We found out that, of course, we do. This is what people use in Brazil the same way in the Northeast to cover their beds. So we said, well, this is the same for us. And what this ended up being is a photo display of some of the hazards they found. Unfortunately, I don't think you can see this here, but we are talking about hazards in the service sector. We are talking about hazards that are common to them. So the photos allowed a group of Brazilian immigrants to discuss with an OSHA inspector. The inspector suggested other hazards not perceived by the group and discuss OSHA standards that address the hazards identified. So the quilt hold the pictures, a practical way to keep the photos together so they can make the display, and they developed the questions that I mentioned to you. And this is how they did it. So it was all that involved sewing, figuring out how we're going to make this permanent, etc., how we can make this portable, etc. Then we used a popular theater, which was going to be a play, and ended up, it was so difficult for this group of Brazilians to actually rehearse and develop the play that they themselves, one of them had experience with movies, were studying film. They decided to transform the play into a video. It's called My Dream, Our Reality. They produced the video based on the ideas of both Augusto Boal and Paulo Freire, two intellectuals, one of them about popular theater, the other one about popular education. And Mariana, who was in the picture before working the project, she ended up using the scripts that they developed for the play. It became the script that they developed for the video. The other method, since we're short of time, is what we call the community-based surveillance. which is a collection of dissemination of information on injuries and fatalities of Brazilian workers based on Brazilian community network channels. I came to realize that in occupational health, we are having kind of a, what I call a bureaucratic approach to surveillance that does not take into account the knowledge that the community has about the workers, about the families. And what we're trying to do is move this agenda of surveillance through Brazilian newspapers, phone calls, how we collected the information, which is, you always did this, but in the case of this kind of surveillance, what we try to do, use the community, because the workplaces are not easy for us to have access to. So we ended up speeding up the process of data collection. We ended up making the deaths of every single Brazilian since this project started a big deal. We tried to change them into campaigns. We publicized together with the Brazilian Migrant Center. We made them front pages of the Brazilian media. We went to the radio and talked about the deaths and why they died. And the story of the families was very important, because most of us do not really realize how deep that affects. It affects every worker's lives, but in the case of immigrants, it may be really a difference between what they can do staying here or even having to go back. We found out that the bodies go to Brazil and people don't know who they are. There's a whole different ball game on what you do with the bodies, even, that we didn't really know. And if you only count numerators and denominators, you don't find out at all. And I believe this is what we're able to do. Fatality alerts together with the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, the Occupational Safety and Health Program, bilingual, Portuguese, English. This is a photograph of one of the mothers, and we learned a whole lot of the stories behind each family. We were able to connect with MassCOSH, the Massachusetts Coalition for Occupational Safety and Health, bring them to the Workers' Safety Memorial, Workers' Memorial Day, and make these deaths really surveillance, really sentinel events, to tell us what's really behind the whole life of these workers, not only in the workplace, but outside the workplace, which I believe is what surveillance is all about. This is what we do for AIDS. This is what we do for infectious diseases. This is what we should do for occupational health. Double click. What's going on here? It's getting stuck. Okay. So we also commit to actions that can change workplace policies as part of this surveillance. So one major one was a campaign against violence in retail establishments, specifically focused on shoplifting. We found out after the death of a Brazilian teenager, actually a Brazilian ethnic teenager, after a shoplifting event, that he was murdered. And we found out this issue about shoplifting is never included in the language that we use on workplace violence. We talk about robberies, we talk about armed robbery, but how about if a shoplifter has a gun or has a weapon, and the kid tries to recover the merchandise that was stolen, and then he dies because of that? So we found out a whole lot about this issue that was not in the agenda. Then the issue about granite construction shops in Massachusetts. We have two Brazilian deaths, actually one in New Hampshire, and we work with OSHA to actually do more of an educational campaign, special emphasis program, as they call it, in granite shops, because workers were dying crushed by huge granite stones. Then this is what we did out of the death of Christian, who is the picture there, together with MassCOSH. That became a survey. They went to several of the stores similar to the one that he died, and I'm not, I don't have conflict of interest with CVS, so I'll tell you, it wasn't a CVS store. And we tried to educate more teenagers and go over the area to talk about this. And I believe I'm ending here. This is an OSHA alliance that we did together with the Brazilian Migrant Center. This is a picture of the director of the Brazilian Migrant Center, Jair de Center. These are regional OSHA directors, which is part of the work we did, and now we have an ability to work with OSHA more more continuously. And then the issue that for those of us in health and safety is nothing new, is providing training with fun for workers. So what we did beyond what we usually did, we always do hands-on approaches, videos, photographs, is we have this guy who is a Brazilian comedian, an immigrant, and he's becoming very successful. We include this in our training. The workers love the half an hour skit, making fun of what they do at the workplace. It helps, you know, solidify the message, and it was a great achievement for us to be able to include this as part of the training. Thanks.